Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Pinkney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinkney. I tell you, I have had quite a week. I can say God has been good to me. I'm telling you this because this is so, so important. Some of the work that we do today is going to reflect on our children later on. And I understand people in Benton Harbor, their minds are not developed enough to understand patience of standing up and fighting for your children. You see, they don't get it, you know. It's all about them. You know, if it's not about them, they don't even want to talk with you, which is amazing. That's just one less person I have to talk to. Matter of fact, to be honest with you, I wish nobody in Benton Harbor ever speak to me. You know, I'm going to be honest with you because what I'm doing now is doing for everybody in this country, not just for the residents of Benton Harbor. I don't need their support because they're not going to do it anyway. They're afraid. They're afraid of the big bad wolf, you see. They're afraid that they're going to come after him or after you, you see. This is why I always say to tell you a little bit about me. I'm going to say whatever I want to say. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. The only thing I ask of you, don't bother me. I promise I won't bother you as long as you stay out my way. And that means you and you. I am going to say whatever I want to say and do whatever I want to do. If you don't like it, too bad. You see, that's how I feel about you, you know, because I think our children is more important than our conversation. Our children are more important than what you think because you're not going to do that no way. You know, we're in this compromising position because you have failed to do anything. You know, here I stand. We are all perpetrators. We are all victims. We can't hide from the truth. The truth do not need any help. The truth could stand alone. Pain and the suffering are too best to present. We can't claim ignorance. The internet gives us daily pictures. Genocide is not something new. We fail to confront the problem. We are liars. We are weak, but we can be strong if we take a stand. We talk about racism. Racism is a system of socially accepted norms that violate God-given rights of selected members of society. Racism is brutality. Racism is violence against humanity. Racism is born from a perverted, invasive form of evil within the corrupt DNA of a human being. You see, here in Benton Harbor, my brothers and sisters has been chasing wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Has been chasing. But my brothers and sisters, they run too fast. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding have failed to catch up with it. They have been unable to catch wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. That's unfortunate. But that's just the way it is. You see, America, brothers and sisters, you're killing them in the classroom. You see, one of the things I think that really hurt black people, you know, we wanted to go, well, I didn't. My parents thought that by going to a white school, we would get a better education. I would say we probably did. But what it did is hurt it down the line. You see, nowadays, education is important. It gives you the ability. It gives you the ability to do other things. And these things that we can do, we must go to the next level. We cannot continue doing the things that we're doing today. We can't do it. It's not going to work. We must make sure that we're on top of what we need to be on top of. You know, we can no longer sit here and fail our community, because nothing is more important than doing what needs to be done. Nothing. I don't care how you look at it. Nothing is more important than doing what needs to be done, you see. And I tell you this. The story this week of all the things that has happened this week alone, you know, is so amazing. It shows what you can do when you decide to come up with a plan. See, I don't utilize the people here in Benton Harbor, because I understand they are people, a piece of work. You know, as a people, the people here has been robbed of themselves. They have no idea who they are. There's not a reason in the world that we should be suffering like we are suffering here in the city of Benton Harbor. It's amazing. And that's why I put together the Sambo of the Year Award and the Sambo Super Bowl. You see, it's all over the country. It's carried, this program itself is carried by 15, that's right, 15 other radio stations. Houston, Texas, St. Louis, Missouri. Yes. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Cincinnati, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio. Charleston, North Carolina. I'm sorry, South Carolina. North Charleston. South Carolina. Oklahoma City and Omaha, Nebraska. We're talking about city, Springfield, Illinois. That's right, Springfield, Illinois. Decatur, Illinois. We talk about all the way out to Colorado Springs, Colorado. We're talking about Durham, North Carolina. Talking about these cities that will also make sure that they get a chance to hear what we're saying. And we also, the good news now, we also have Atlanta, Georgia. So the 15 cities, if I didn't mention your city, forgive me. But the Sambo of the Year Award is bigger than me. It's bigger than me. The Sambo of the Year Award is bigger than me. But we want to make sure that people understand who these people are. We want to make sure that they understand that we're laying the law down. Here's the thing. Let me give you these tools. For the city of Houston, Texas, 31,142. St. Louis, Missouri, 30,444. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 30,127. Cincinnati, Ohio, 30,119. Columbus, Ohio, 30,015. And the champs, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 31,241. We are the champs. I knew that nobody was going to out-sample my samples. They're not going to do it. You know, nobody can out-sample Reverend Pinky Sambo. these families are huge, you know, but it's all over the country. You see, time to wake people up. We have to wake people up. We got to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing, you see. And by calling these families out, they will always be labeled now for the rest of their life. When people speak of them, they will call them samples. We got the queen bee, my letter C. And that's B-I. That's not the B-E-E. The queen bee. We got her. Without her, I don't think we would have won. She is the person, this motor, this engine running. And I'm so proud of her for coming forward and actually taking me to court. If she had not taken me to court, it probably never would have got this big. But I appreciate it. I appreciate every single minute of this. This is huge. Then she's followed by the mayor of all Sambos in the whole country. He's the top mayor, all the Sambos in the whole country. He's from the Nation of Islam. He's from the Nation of Islam. Minister Louis Farrakhan Group. It's unfortunate that he told this guy to run for mayor, but he also told him to take care of the people. He had no intention of taking care of the people. He was trying to figure out a way how he could fatten his wallet at the expense of how this was. This was a shameful thing, but this is what the people here is used to. It's not really out of the character of the people here. This is what they love, being oppressed. You see, that's one of the things they love. They love being oppressed. You see, as long as they're oppressed, they're happy. That's the way it appears to me. That's why I took this thing national. You see, I wasn't going to be a corner just into Benton Harbor. Well, it's not going to happen because I know we'll get nothing done if we just depend on the people here in the city of Benton Harbor. So now we got the whole country. And also all different states have joined in. And before this thing, next year's Super Bowl, we're going to have a real thing. But it's going down. We are the winner of Super Bowl, the Sambo Super Bowl number one. We are the champs. The champs is here. The champs is here. The champs is here. That's what we can keep chatting over and over again. And I can't forget this Dwayne Seats character. He's a scumbag. He's a scumbag of all scumbags. He's a scumbag of Sambos. Not just here in Benton Harbor, but across the country. So we got it all right here. We got the queen bee, our letter C. Without her, we probably would not have won. I don't see us winning without her because people read her bio and they know who she is. Then we have the mayor of all Sambos. We have him, Marcus Muhammad. We have him. He's the mayor of all the Sambos in the whole country. That's right. He's the mayor of all Sambos in the whole country. That's amazing. And then we have Dwayne Seat, the scumbag of all Sambos in this country. But I'm happy to be the $3,000 that we are going to receive for this is nothing. But I'm going to make sure that I utilize that money for the residents here in Benton Harbor. My goal is to have a 3-on-3 and a free throw contest just to get them money. I really don't care one way or the other, but it's an opportunity to get people together and help them figure out this mess. I got to say, we are in a mess. You see, Whirlpool Corporation are the ones who have been manufacturing Sambos here in Benton Harbor. And they also put their label on the back of their neck let you know that they are made by Whirlpool Corporation. And we have some good news. The good news is this is the last year the senior PGA will be here. It will be the last year that the residents of Benton Harbor will be exploited by Harbor Shores and Whirlpool Corporation. That's a major victory for the people, a major victory. See, we have to use all our victories and utilize our talent to make sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do. It's crucial that we understand that. We understand how far we're going to be able to go, what we're going to be able to do, and let's take it from there. I want to bring in my first guest, Philip Bass. He wrote the book, Soldier of Truth, about me, of all the people in the whole wide world. He wrote the book. A great writer, you know. I'm sorry that he has taken a nap. He's no longer out here writing and doing all these wonderful things writing, but it'll come back to him. See, once a writer, always a writer, you see. Well, we're going to talk about the sample, and probably this might be the last opportunity until September. When we start talking about samples again, we're going to take it to that level. On that note, I'm going to bring in my good friend, the one and only, Philip Bass. Philip Bass, talk to me. Tell me what's
going on.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm a little ashamed. Your comment about me taking a nap. Hey, I want to
why are you saying that, Phil? You hurt me. You know I got feelings.
You know, I'm probably ashamed of myself, to be honest. Sometimes I feel, you know, I'm not as focused as you, that's for sure. A different kind of writing these days, writing a song.
Uh-huh.
And it made me think of, you know, I've told you that I have at least three or four songs, for the most part, pretty much totally made up anyway, not written down or anything like that. But,
you got three, four songs in your head?
No, I'm talking about these are songs. I envision a musical about you, actually.
So
this is something. You know, this is kind of it could be a long-term goal for me. You know, what I'm finding is that songwriting is harder than I anticipated. It's taken a lot, so I'm learning quite a bit about that. So I just wanted to put that out there. That's something that I'd really like to see happen someday.
I would like to see you do a play.
Well, this would be a musical, kind of like
a musical.
That one Hamilton. It would be along those lines. Yeah, that was quite popular. My grandkids just loved it. They were singing all the songs around the house and. It was neat, but anyway, that's as far as the writing goes, and you know, I've thought about writing. There are a few things, Reverend, to be honest with you. You know, when I wrote your book, it took me 6 months just to get off my butt. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh,
and
I do.
Took me 8 months.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
You know.
As a matter of fact, I remember how I used to have to wrestle with you and everything to get you focused. And, you know, I mean, it was ugly, Phil. I got to tell you the truth. It was ugly. I had to do a couple of wrestling moves on you.
You did. You're quite a persuader, I think. And that's a good thing. You've been super, super good for me. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Fambo thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really proud of you for winning.
Yeah.
And spreading it around the country. One thing I can see from all the success you've had is that, you know, as in style as taking bribes and stuff has become, it's obvious a lot of people still don't like that stuff, and they like calling it out. You know, as common as it's become. I think it's getting to the point where people are just kind of fed up with it. But what, you know, this is not an official nomination or anything, but I just wanted to mention the NAACP as a candidate for Sambo of the Year. I wanted to let you know about a guy who's talking on the internet. His name is Cali Means. It's C-A-L-L-E-Y is how you spell his first name. And then the last name is Means, just M-E-A-N-S. And he's a pharmaceutical insider. But he's also, he works for the Coca-Cola company. And he mentioned the NAACP two times. He said when he worked for Coke, he might have, I'm not sure. I'd have to listen to the story again. But I encourage people to go online and look at him. But anyway, he said when he worked for Coke, he or somebody else, it was their job to go to the NAACP, offer them a large amount of money. I think it was in the, probably the millions, but certainly a large amount of money. And what the message they were to present to people was that Coke wanted to push pop. They wanted people on food stamps to be able to buy pop. And so the NAACP was to say that it was racist for them to not let people buy pop with their food stamps, which, you know, I guess some people might agree with that, but I think, you know, for the most part, we would agree that pop is not the best food for you. In fact, it's contributed a lot to all diabetes that we have, you know. And I don't know. I just think, you know, you could argue either way, but in my opinion, what they were trying to do is push their product, and they were slanting what's really going on and using the NAACP to do that. Now, here's – and this happened, you know, years ago. Nowadays, what's happening right now in real time, as they say, this drug Ozempic, which they're using for diabetes – and maybe Dr. Times comes on. Maybe he can shed some light on. I don't know if he's, you know, encountered that yet. You know, the pharmaceutical agents coming in and you know, recommending it for people or whatever. But it's super expensive. I don't know if it's a year or, you know, nowadays these drugs, even thousands a month. You know, and they want, basically the message is the same. The NAACP, I believe, is what they want them to bring out is that it's racist not to pay, you know, I guess for Medicaid or the public, not to pay for Ozempic for people with diabetes or maybe even obese people for the rest of their life. And I mean, they'll have to have it for the rest of their life. And so I just kind of want to alert people to that. You know, it's sad. But the NAACP has been used for things like this. It seems like money, you know, influences a lot of people. I remember even here in Kalamazoo, some official of the NAACP was caught setting fires in the city. Mm. And to me, it's just a, you know, burning houses. And you know that they, this seems to happen, it's questionable when it happens in certain neighborhoods. I know it happens just a
little.
You know, you hear reports about that. They want to.
Do you know why he was setting the fire? Was he setting the fire for somebody or what?
Yeah, I believe so. And actually, it was a woman, Reverend. But
it was a woman?
I can't remember. Yeah, it was a woman.
Wow, and she was a member of the NAACP.
Yeah, I believe she was in kind of an official in the city, but I, you know, more than that, I don't remember. But it's just, you know, in my.
Phil, were you with me when we went to Detroit, and I was suing the NAACP?
I
remember, we went to court up there, me, Belinda, all and everybody from Detroit. We had so many people. We had stacked the whole courtroom, and they were trying to outer me. They were trying to get rid of me because I was picketing Whirlpool. See, Whirlpool is another one of those thing that comes up with these little gimmicks to use to take advantage of black people. But the thing was, I think that was one of my biggest moments when I took the NAACP to court, and I had Buck and Elliot Hall. They were my two lawyers, and they was ready.
Yes.
And Elliot Hall, now, he used to be vice president of the national NAACP.
Is that right?
And they took up the case, I knew we was in the right. You see what I'm saying? And I was asking for money, you know, more than anything else. I didn't give a rat butt about the NAACP, but that money could have got us where we wanted to be. And then we can go on our own. You know, we was asking for $75,000, and Buck and Elliot Hall was not charging me any money to deal with it, but we had them on the ropes. I was using the rope-a-dope on them. And I mean, we were like, hey, Phil, the judge called me and Buck Young and the other attorney into his chamber. He said, yeah. We know you are right. You see, he said, we know that. He said, the problem is I can't give you that money because I don't think the damage was that like that. I said, well, this will cause, you know, this will affect me for the rest of my life because, you know, they're trying to disown me, and I can't think of another way but to satisfy myself. So then Buck took over and started talking. And you are 100% right about the NAACP. I wouldn't want to be part of the NAACP. Now, at one time, they was good now. I can't take that away from them. But you know, today they not worth a nickel. And they should.
Oh,
if five people come on and vote for them to be to participate in the Sambo award in September, they're definitely going to ballot.
Okay. So, that'll be interesting.
Hey, I'll put them on the ballot, Phil. All you need to do is get five people. That's it.
Okay.
You get five people.
Well, maybe five and, people who are listening right now, you know.
But it's not until September.
Yeah.
They might be one also, remember this, Phil, they just might be one of the ones who I could take to the Super Bowl next year, Super Bowl II. since we the champions, I never thought that we was going to be able to beat Houston. They got almost 3 million people in Houston. I never thought that we would be able to beat them, but I wanted the recognition more than anything else to talk about it. And even St. Louis, they got 1 million people. But my thing was that when they called and told me yesterday, it wasn't the money. I really didn't care about the money. I cared about them spreading the word more than anything else. And we came out to be the Super Bowl champs, the Sambo Super Bowl champs. We had 31,000 people email. 31,000. I mean, I'm messed up.
Yeah,
and they got other people to go. I thought Houston was going to pound us. I'm going to be honest. I was ready to give him, write that check to him right away. But I never thought for a moment, Phil, that we would be able to compete with them. You know. Yeah. Ben Harbor only got 10,000. Go
Reverend,
ahead.
About, some of the other top candidates who was a you know, what cities had really stories that you thought were compelling? Or are you talking about that at all? Like
I, well,
sure
you know what? You know what? I did not talk about theirs. their thing, but they talked about our thing, you see. And I think that's how a small city like Benton Harbor got so many people to vote, you know. Like I said, you know, we was on 15 different radio stations. First it turned out it was 6, and it went to 10, then it went to 15, and even now people still, they won't. But it's a lot of work for me, like I tell them. You see, and right now, I'm, you know, since the Super Bowl is over with, we're not having no more candidates until September. You know, and the $3,000, I'm happy, but there's so much that we can do. I just don't know. I wasn't counting on this, you know, the money part, but I did count on this to getting the word out. But, Phil, I got to say this, I am so, so excited. I mean, I'm thrilled, and I'm just like I actually won the Super Bowl. I feel, you know, you should have saw the way I feel. I couldn't even sleep last night. I mean, and that's not like me. I played ball all my life. I was a pressure ball player. But I couldn't even sleep last night. I just getting up and just walking and said, wow. And that's all I can say, Phil. Wow.
Man. Congratulations. Hey, I heard you say something. The PGA is not playing
No, the PGA will not. This is their last year, the PGA.
And do you have anything to do with that or what?
Well, you know, they had a contract, and it didn't work out the way they thought it was going to work out. You know, it didn't produce like they thought it would. It didn't produce the recognition that they thought they was going to get. I every year I write them a letter, you know. I write them a letter and tell them, you know, the exploitation got to stop. You know, those are my words to them. But it's good. Yeah. For the last 10 years, they received a letter from me.
My gosh. Well, and congratulations on that one, too. So
my thing was that I really didn't want them to do, after this year, to do nothing. I really don't even want, I want them to close the golf course down, to be honest with you.
Well, part of it was stolen, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to continue to be that way. But, yeah, but we have to stay focused, make sure we're doing what we need to do, Phil, and take this thing to a whole different level. We can win if we fight, you know. We may not have the resources, but we can win if we fight. And if we fight, you know, the next generation will see us fight. And then the next generation, we got to keep fighting. You know, they got us fighting with each other. That's what they see. And that's why the next generation is going to be fighting with each other.
Yeah,
you
know, I look at young people these days, and they, in my opinion, you just told me a story about some kind of ignorant people, but young people these days, I have a lot of hope. I just feel like they're more open-minded, and racism is, to me, not as big a thing. Maybe I'm seeing it differently than it is, but I know my own grandchildren certainly don't take much stock in it, you know. I'm hopeful, Reverend. You know, the young people, they look at us, and you know, and a lot of the old racist, really conservative people are dying off. You know, we're left with this kind of the 60s generation, peace and love and all that. Of course, you know, they call us the boomers, and it's not really a compliment, right?
Right, definitely not. That's definitely not a compliment.
Right, and I don't know quite how to take that one, you know, what we have to offer to the world, you know, or what they want to accept from, you know, the older generation.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we just got to do, you know, I'm proud of your grandbabies too, you know. Look like they have stood tall, you see. And they probably don't, they may not never see racism, you know. But at least make them aware,
you know, so they don't be shocked.
You'd have to ask them because I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
To be quite honest.
I would like to interview them one day.
Well, that'd be
great. You know, that's my family. I would love to interview them. Yeah, Phil. I mean, that is a you know, especially the oldest. Oh, she's 16 now, right?
Oh, she's about to be 17. Yep, at the end of
bless
the
her heart. Bless her heart. Man, this is too great. Well, yeah, right on.
Girl.
All right, Phil. Look, I gotta let you go. I gotta bring in Dr. Tan. What was that question you wanted to ask Dr. Tan?
Oh, about Ozempic. You know, what he's heard about it and what he thinks about it. If he wants to. But, you know, I always like listening to whatever he has to say.
Yeah, he's definitely definitely on the money, and his wisdom, his knowledge, wow, is beyond my imagination, you know. But, yeah, I'm going to bring him in, and I want to make sure that he might be able to answer that question. So hold on right there. Let me bring in Dr. Tan, the one and only Dr. Tan himself. Talk to me, Doc. How are you?
Okay, let's answer the question about Ozempic. Ozempic, we have different drugs, GPL-1, a glucagon-like peptide that comes out of South Africa, initially started with the Gila monster in their saliva, but also from the cactus that the cocoyo, or what you call the Han, it's cocoyo, they call the Twa, the Pygmy, the those are the Bushmen. Those, they have a cactus that they chew that they suppress appetite. So they only eat really when they're really hungry to eat. That now has been picked up and made in two versions. One is a pill called Rybelsus, and the other ones are your different shots going by different names. What we deal with is Ozempic, but, you know, there's other names out there, which are the same drug, different manufacturer, just a slightly little bit different. It does help to suppress appetite, but what winds up happening, a human being's a knucklehead, your body produces this chemical, and what you're supposed to do is start off at a low dose. Actually, take that low dose out for at least a couple of months, no less than 3 months, while you adjust your eating habits and behaviors. Human beings tend to follow Satan. They are, you know, they've been punished with gluttony, greed, for, not just for money, but for food. They want to eat, just like they want to do evil and still get into heaven, like they want to do wrong and still get into heaven. So what I'm saying, and to make it clear, is that this is a temporary drug to help with appetite while you do things to break bad habits. And why I say it's satanic is that the first sin in the world in biblical history in terms of the Western culture was over food. That was the whole first fight. The first temptation of Christ was over food, stone to bread. So it's always been demonic and demonic behaviors that were doing the most evil and wrong back then used to be overweight gluttonies, kings and bishops and all of like that had the poor people starving and that they were wasting food. So if you're going to go on one of these GPL-1s, no matter what the name is, this is what you're supposed to do. like the song, This Is How You Do It. So number one, you teach yourself to say your grace to whatever God or deity. Then you drink one glass for the Father, one glass for the Son, one glass for Muhammad, one glass for Bilal. You can do it like that. You can drink, one glass for Elohim, one glass for Yahweh. But you need to drink two glasses of water, juice, tea, or lemonade before you put any food in your mouth. You need to drink two glasses of a beverage, water, juice, tea, lemonade, before you put any food in your mouth, especially at lunch and at dinner. So at lunch and at dinner, you have two glasses of water, juice, tea, or lemonade before you eat. So you say your grace, drink one for the Father, one for the Son, or one for Muhammad, one for Bilal, or one for Yahweh, one for Elohim. Whatever you want to do, however it's going to help you remember, you do that. That is the hardest fight, because Satan, Satan, I would say his name, Lucifer, is going to come and whisper in your ear that if you do that, you're going to get full quicker. And even if you want to put your eyes, that those 18 ounces will make 16 ounces in your stomach and cut your stomach in half, and you're going to get full quicker. Therefore, you should be the box it up king, bag it up prince. That you should be able to eat twice off that meal. That's what you want to do with it. What people are doing is trying to push and rush the dose to get a rapid weight loss and not a natural weight loss. People want to rush the dose to get a rapid weight loss and not a natural weight loss. People want to rush the dose to get a rapid weight loss and not a natural weight loss, because you really shouldn't change the dose until 3 to 4 months while you work on the behavior. And then once you work on that behavior, you'll see that after 3 to 4 months, then you're going to plateau. And then what you can do when you plateau with drinking two glasses before you eat any food at lunch and dinner, you add a large plate of salad with lunch and dinner, not a bowl, but a large plate of salad with lunch and dinner. As you add that, and if you add a third glass to that, when you help wash down the food, you'll see it's going to trigger the body and you're going to lose more weight again. Now, if you don't lose more weight by adding the salad and the third glass of water, now it's time for you to go up to the next dose. So you go up to the next dose and maintain those same habits. And what you'll see, that will go out for another 3 months or so, but then starting your weight loss again, so you would again be losing a lot of weight. It's very rarely you're going to get to the third dose. Some people get to the third dose and they're really, really skinny. But what normally happens by then is that the people have cut down where they only need two meals a day. Some people have cut down where they only eat one meal a day. That is what the goal is, because the government's going to force you to come off of the shot. You're going to have to get the shot. But if you've already developed this behavior and lifestyle or habit of eating, then you are unaffected. You will stay at that weight. The most you'll gain back will be a pound or two, but you've already changed your brain chemistry and how it operates and how your body metabolism operates, and you will be at that weight. So what has happened with these Hollywood people who push the dose, they go real fast, a dose a month, what has happened is they've got a rapid weight loss. They've still been, many have still been trying to be greedy and still eat a lot of food. And then once they come off of the shot, there's a rapid gain of weight again because psychologically they're still messed up in the head. So, yes, it can help you lose weight. And any way you lose weight is going to have health benefits for you. So I wanted to address his question thoroughly before we moved on because there's a lot of people on that. The other thing that I was listening to him, like, because he's one of those diamonds we talk about. You know, you got the other ones that politicians be trying to beat as zirconium, fake diamond, and the other majority of the population is that fake glass. And and the studies pan that out in terms of their racist attitudes. So he makes me think about correcting two things in history. Things in history is number one, the 40 acres and the mule. So right now what's going on, you got a Indian chick from Puja of India, wealthy parents come in and she marries white and therefore she's considered white. And we talk about who's calling Nikki because she's tricky, but she's an immigrant Indian chick who's trying to be more white than the white. She's trying to be more grand than the Grand Master of the Ku Klux Klan. So, you know, we have to, if you're going to call out the Coons and the Sambos, you got to call those kind of individuals out also. So people think it's all about the South, but when people talk about the 40 acres and the mule, they're forgetting about the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, the Fugitive Eight Slave Act of 1850. Mm-hmm. And since we talk about the woman, you know, it was Mary Bowen who was the wife of what then was going to be the mayor of Washington, D.C., you know, she wrote the letter to Congress. This white woman, like the white women who spit and threw rocks and stuff at Dr. King, these white women who couldn't stand blacks so much that they attacked Dr. King, but in the Civil Rights Bill, they were given top priority in the Civil Rights Bill over the blacks who have bled and died for civil rights. So when you check out the Civil Rights Bill, you will see that white women are classified as a minority, even though they're in the numerical majority in the white population. And they were adversarial to the civil rights movement, human rights movement, and they were also the ones who used to kill most of the African slaves and beat them to death, the white women, where they had to create a law to protect them called the Casual Killing Act, because the white women were going to be charged with destruction of property because they were killing the black slaves. And the Casual Killing Act, you know, helped them from having to go to prison for destruction of property. You can look that up. So you have this white woman, she wrote, I'm going to quote you, "No sane-minded man acquainted with the black population in the South could wish them liberated and allow them to remain in the States." Mm-hmm. Now, what are we talking about? We're talking about 7 years later on the eve of the Civil War that the white people in America, opinion poll showed that 98% of all European Americans, all European white Americans, were opposed to ending slavery and freeing black people. 98%. And the whole thing is that the society knew that these people would not be able to survive without some land, money, tools, shelters, animals, you know, or weapons. But the surprising part of that is that a lot of that animosity came from the North. And people keep forgetting the emancipation did not free people who were enslaved in the North. It freed them in the South where Lincoln had no control. Because what people, another thing we got to get clear, yeah, that after the Civil War had ended, you know, that the enslaved Africans, you know, have received really nothing. But there were some few diamonds, some few what they call radicals, in Northern Republicans, because back then who sort of controlled the House of Congress and executive branch of government, trying to enact a bill to authorize the ex-slaves to receive 40 acres, a mule, and $100. So we need to get that correct. We need to get that correct. Here we go. It was 40 acres, a mule, and $100. And you can't comprehend what that means at this day and age, because $5 was the equivalent of $100 today, because that's what you had to pay if you were white, European American white, and they were giving this wealth plan to American Indians. And if you wanted to get, you know, the benefits like a welfare social service that the American Indians were going to be receiving from the government, you had to pay $5 to join the Dawes Rolls, D-A-W-E-S, and you became a $5 Indian. That's where that phrase comes from. If somebody's really enjoying their meal that they're eating, here the plates. But it was Congress of Thaddeus Stevens and Charles Sumner and other radical Republicans that had filed that bill to give them some an economic foundation. So you have a few diamonds like your guest who's on there today who are human beings who have the humanitarian gene that they see brotherhood in all people, in all human beings. But the majority, as it stated, 98% do not. 1% pretends. And it's only 1%. He, your guest, is part of the 1% of the world that's European American, that has humanity, that has a heart, that is God-sent and divine. The rest of them are more so satanic followers faking the funk. So I wanted to make sure that we understood that that was clear and that it was the Northern races who fought to make sure that blacks would never get land and be empowered. And they also contribute with the South. You know, the South had enacted what's called the Black Codes, which replaced the old slave codes and which locked out, you know, African Americans from posterity and forced them into sharecropping and Jim Crow segregation. So this is so important. Now, when we talk about 1861, Abraham Lincoln, you know, signed the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which would have made it unconstitutional for the United States Congress to act and enact laws on free blacks from slavery. So the 13th Amendment, you know, there were two versions of that that people don't know that were enacted in 1860s. and the 36th Congress. See, the whole thing about what we have to get straight is that Lincoln didn't give a damn about blacks. He wanted to save the Union, and he said that. If he can keep slavery and save the Union, he would. But he needed the freed slaves in the South fighting the Confederate Army for their freedom, disrupting the war and the supply food chain and wealth of not picking cotton, not grabbing food, stuff like that. So he needed to cause a civil unrest in the South to help his Northern troops to defeat the South in order to win the war. And when he did the 13th Amendment, he had the white clause in there, European-American clause in there that said that slavery ends for blacks, slavery is ended for African-Americans, slavery is ended for the Negro or the color, whatever you want to say, as long as they are not arrested and imprisoned. The 13th Amendment says you are not a slave as long as you are not in prison. But if you are in the prison, you are considered a slave again, according to the 13th Amendment. So all the blacks that you see in prison right now, marijuana charges, or crack cocaine charges, stuff like that, they are considered slaves by the 13th Amendment of the Constitution.
Jesus Christ.
And that came down through your president, Abraham Lincoln. And this is why people cry for Abraham Lincoln, but they don't know the history. So I wanted to go a little bit differently direction because we're going to need some of your diamonds to step forward because in Detroit, and I thank you, Reverend Pinckney, because you made Detroit aware of a horrendous injustice. And I want your guest, I want his opinion as a European American, not your opinion, that down in Detroit, and predominantly 99% black community, I'm almost there to say 100% black community, there is a hospital called Sinai Grace in Detroit, Michigan. And 99% of the staff at that hospital is not black. And this coming year, this month, that the internal medicine department that trains the internal medicine doctors who you see on the floor, these new interns, is ran by Indians and Arabs. And the Indian guy there named Sadiq has for years stopped accepting Americans, European Americans, Black Americans, Native Americans. And now this whole year class that's coming in this month is flying in from Syria, from Pakistan, from Iraq, different Arab countries, Indian countries, to the United States. Never been here before. Coming by J-1 visa or an H-1 visa to Detroit to be the doctors for this black community while the doctors from that black community are excluded from practicing medicine at that hospital. I want his opinion. Did I say that correctly enough where it caught your eye, or do I need to rephrase it in a way to get your attention?
Absolutely, Doc. But unfortunately, Doc, we have ran out of time.
Okay, I was trying to get... Okay.
Phil, you got a minute to comment, and then we got to move on.
Sorry, am I on, Robert? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm from Detroit. In fact, my mom worked at the Sinai Hospital. But, Dr. Stein, what exactly was your question?
Okay. What I said, Phil, what I wanted your opinion of how I stated it, if that caught your attention and would help to galvanize you to say that's wrong or I'm not clear enough yet.
Well, it's wrong. And I would extend that to even things like school busing and so on.
Right, but we have to stay focused. So in the hospital right now, we got to stay focused. So and I'll say it real quickly because you may have been doing something. What's happening at Sinai Grace Hospital, the Arab Indians, Dr. Sadiq and them, have blocked and banned Americans and found there are no Americans.
I was listening the whole time. I heard everything you said. And you're saying, there's a lot of weird things happening in this country. That's just one of them. It doesn't make any sense to me, really. Yeah, I mean, even on an economic level.
Yeah, I was trying to be just very specific and not generalized. So, but we ran out of time. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh well.
All right, then. We have to take this up at another time. Cause right now we are completely out of time. Listen, we'll talk soon. God bless you both. We'll make it happen. Annette, hang in there, Annette. We got you covered. I got you down for a couple of minutes on Sunday. Talk to you later.